All right, some differing predictions in Group A. Let's go to Group B, which I think let's spend a little less time on this. I'm not as excited by this lineup.
Some like what's that Migos song? All Us.
Tao, let's start with you. Belgium, are they too old, or will we finally see the golden generation come to fruition?
I think people will, coming out of a club football season, will revise their expectations of what is too old and too slow very quickly. I think that we're looking at through the lens of Belgium having this ageing defence and players that maybe aren't great club footballers anymore. We may have to arrive at this tournament and realise that international football still lags 10 to 20 years behind the very pinnacle of club football. And when you finish with the Champions League pointy end and the culmination of the league seasons, my belief is that people are writing off Belgium a little bit too early. I think the harmony in their squad, I know a lot of people say, well, Roberto Martinez, but I actually think he has tapped into what this team needs to maintain racial and ethnic harmony, both across the Flemish and Walloon lines and also the racial lines within the side. We know that has harpooned a number of these, you know, mixed-race European teams over the last 30 years. So I think they have the right chemistry, and I'm actually thinking that not only will De Bruyne recover from his face injury in time to play a meaningful role in the tournament, but I also suspect Eden Hazard will maybe relish a stage without the pressure of Real Madrid and the various failings that he has had at club level. And then Lukaku leading the line is exactly the sort of striker you want for international football, and I think he's a very good chance to win the Golden Boot. So the real question for me is, how obvious is it going to be that Russia were on performance-enhancing drugs at the 2018 World Cup?
Still should have beaten them in 90. The big one, the big improvement is Tielemans. He arguably should have started in 2018, but is it a net gain when you have Hazard in such dire physical form, and not calling Sailormakers is a huge one, especially without Hazard and the movement that he provides. You need someone who is great off the ball for Belgium. And that's outside of his dribbling and his capacity to beat players one-on-one. That's the main thing that Eden Hazard provided. And if Eden Hazard doesn't play, or he's, you know, kept in cotton wool, you need a player like Sailormakers. And outside of Sailormakers, like maniacal pressing that he provided for Milan this season, if you play a front three of Mertens, Lukaku and De Bruyne in a 3-4-3, who's providing a reference point out of those three, unless Lukaku is, you know, dropping all the way to the wing to receive the ball and, you know, incorporating, you know, like their wing backs are good. Like I'm okay with even using Carrasco as a left wing back and Castagne on the other side. Like that's fine, but I think the big one for them is reference points off the ball. And that is the one knock, or the biggest flaw in Kevin De Bruyne. When the lights are brightest, like the proverbial tightens up when it comes to the positions he receives the ball and the decisions he does make on the ball. And you kind of saw that in Champions League Final 1, but you see it very much with Belgium. Even in the games that, you know, let's say playing against a Japan as opposed to playing a France in the World Cup, he relies on others as reference points, and I don't think that changes even now. The fact that, speaking of club football, or international football lagging behind club football, Kevin De Bruyne is a good example of that, because Manchester City's automation and automated style of play is specifically designed to maximize his final ball. And I don't think that's the case with Belgium. Like he needs other players in order to function within a collective. I don't think that's the case.
Just quickly about Roberto Martinez, I think the one thing that he's always lacked, I think, because thinking about, you know, being a Wigan fan, I've seen Roberto Martinez when he first started as a coach, and he hasn't learned this lesson from then until now, and I've seen it progress in this system that he plays with the back three. He plays brilliant going forward, defensively, going back the other way, there's a lot of flaws in the way that he plays. And he loves to throw numbers forward and play attacking, and he's a great man manager. They love him, but I still have my trepidations about them going defensively. I still think they're going to have enough to get through this group quite comfortably. Well, not comfortably. I think they'll top the group. But I think, as you mentioned, Ante, the Salamaker's omission doesn't make sense for me. I think, you know, when you look at the guys they've picked, and guys like Nasser Chadli still getting selected, you know, even Mishi Batchelor, they're not the same players they once were. And Alexis Salamakers has played basically every game this year, and he's such an underrated player, even by Milan fans themselves. But just before we move on completely, just about this group, I think the one team we've got to talk about here mainly is Denmark. I think this is one of the most complete teams in terms of what they offer in this whole tournament. They've got a great defence, a great goalkeeper. They've got a midfield. You know, Christian Eriksen had a great second half of the season at Inter. But the only issue I think that's going to hold Denmark back is who leads the line. You know, Martin Braithwaite, is he the guy that can actually pull something out for them? Can Yusuf Poulsen or can Kasper Dolberg? So a lot of questions about them, but I think defensively they are going to be very hard to break down, especially when you've got a guy like Simon Kjær leading things defensively. His leadership is just through the roof, and he plays beyond his limitations, and I think Denmark are going to make this really, really interesting in this group.
Yeah. But the thing about Eriksen, you know, the thing about all three of those Inter players, like, that Inter midfield was the sum of its parts. Like, you know, okay, outside of Broza being an elite defensive midfielder in a single pivot, Barella and Vidal didn't work together, but, like, Eriksen worked coming into that team because he had Brozovic and Barella on the other side. And, you know, they covered like a wide range of attributes in that respect. How much of a burden will Eriksen have to carry? That, I think that's a very pertinent question with respect to Denmark. And like you said, who does lead the line? He's never, like, there really hasn't been a lot of faith shown in Yusuf Poulsen. Jorgensen as well. You know, he's a very one-dimensional lumbering oaf. There's like this bracket of European nations that are solid defensively and good enough in transition, but like when they come up against each other, it's almost like a lucky dip. And I think Denmark's one of those nations.
Well, Lockie, why are you excited about Denmark then, if they're just one of these Scandi, boar draw, big lumbering oaf teams? To be honest, I'm not so worried about the striker situation. I'm most worried about Christian Eriksen's hairline, because that shit is getting very sketchy.
That's
just to come home, man.
That's a fair concern as well. I mean, the main reason, the striker concerns are legitimate, but if you look elsewhere in this side, there is a lot of really nice elements about this squad, like very, very strong in defense. I'm actually amazed my eyeball has nearly popped out at the fact that neither Ante nor Nick, the resident Milan fans of this call, if you didn't already know, didn't mention Simon Kjær at all.
He did.
Oh, you did. Oh, sorry. He went on some spiel about Salamakers not making the Belgium squad, and I won't lie, I tuned out. But what interests me as well beyond the striker situation is the way in which they set up the midfield as well, like which players get selected in those presumably three spots is really interesting. And I think it's been touched upon the conservative approach that some of these nations can take to their football.
Like, you're likely going to see Højbjerg and Delaney.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Is there's a great 10 here. There is an excellent screener in a midfield three. Eriksen and Højbjerg can do those two roles. Who is that third midfielder that fits in? If it's Delaney,
and it's likely Delaney.
I think there are some issues there with respect to functionality. Is that enough to stop them from getting into second this group? I don't think so, but the reason I'd still have stocks in them as a team is if they do finish second, they're looking at potentially, you know, I've done the FOTMOB bracket a few different times and cut it a few separate ways. They're looking at one of maybe a Germany or a Netherlands. Best case scenario that I had, I think where I put them first, has them playing Switzerland. And
teams you can react against.
Yeah, these are all teams that I think Denmark are certainly capable of beating, especially one that is so incompetent at the moment like the Netherlands. So the good thing for them is they're strong enough to get through this group in the top two, and once they get to one of those spots, they've got beatable opponents waiting for them at the round of 16, and once they get past that, it's a check mark for them where the tournament's
going. Damir, before we move on, can I get you to weigh in on Russia and or Finland? Dealer's choice.
So a bit like Group A, I think that there's some parallels in that you'll get two home teams in terms of Russia will be playing at home and so will Denmark. Also, Finland, when they do play in Russia, they're playing in St. Petersburg, so it's a short trip across the Gulf of Finland for them. But overall, I think, you know, Russia have, you know, gone backwards since 2018, unsurprisingly, really. They're heavily reliant on Artem Dzyuba up front. A lot of the players that had standout tournaments in 2018 haven't perhaps progressed as Russian fans might have expected them to. You know, you look at the defense will look a bit different to what it was in 2018. In goal, they'll no longer have Akinfeev. And I think, you know, both Golovin and Miranchuk, although having, you know, they've moved away from the Russian Premier League now, aren't really playing, you know, particularly in the case of Miranchuk, he's, you know, not a regular starter by any stretch of the measure at Atalanta. So I think with Russia, one of the priorities for them would be to win that game against Finland, and that will determine whether they finish up as one of the best third place teams, because I just don't see them beating Denmark away from home. And I also think that if, you know, they had a lot of trouble against Kevin De Bruyne when he played against them, it was a really comfortable win for Belgium only a year or so ago, or 2 years ago in 2019. And I think one of the other things with Denmark, to go back to them, that wasn't mentioned was the fact that, you know, are they perhaps a victim of this tournament being played 12 months later? Because they might have potentially had Lasse Schoene in the midfield alongside Højbjerg and Eriksen, which I think would have been a better and more balanced fit. I think when it comes to going to Finland, you know, they're one of the teams that have qualified because of the fact that the qualifying group that they were in was not very good. Italy was comfortably top, but you had very average Greece and Bosnia teams in their group, and that made qualifying much easier for them. And ultimately, I don't think they have enough quality to get a point, let alone get a win.